Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
We welcome you all to a Roll to Cast RPG podcast in the world of The Witcher RPG by R. Telsorian Games, starring Sean Fleul as Aurelius Tarnair, Ellen Graham as Eve of Hirch, and Christopher Bond as Brioc. Story, GMing, and additional rules by Phil Harker-Smith. Design by Jack Sumner. Music by Max Garcia Underwood. This is the Blood-Soaked Rose.
One and all, and welcome back to Roll to Cast from Baby Beard Media. This is our tabletop role-playing podcast where we play a different game every season with original music, original stories, and a rotating storyteller who is going to be me this time.
Oh, congratulations.
Who is going to be me?
I'm going to be me. I will be the GM this time around.
And who are you?
I am Phil. Phil. And I'm joined by...
I'm Ellen.
I am Sean.
And my name is Chris.
Fantastic. Thanks for being here, everybody.
The game's back together.
Yeah, we sure are.
We never really left, but
no. Well, we have, but for you, it's only been one singular week.
Yes. Or you're joining us for the first time.
That's also true.
Exactly.
And so, welcome. Hey, so thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
Whether you're a veteran or this is your first time, we're happy to have you. It does not matter to us. And if you want to support the podcast, if you want to help us make more of this, we do have a Patreon. That is patreon.com/babybeard. We have tiers with different rewards. You can get on our Discord. You can join our monthly live game and chat. Lots of good things there as well. And that helps us make more of this lovely stuff.
Yay.
So this is season six. And you are in session zero, where we'll have a little bit of talk about the game we're going to play, the world it's in, and the characters that my three lovely colleagues have prepared to dive into my little story.
One we prepared earlier.
Yes, I hope so.
And just remember, a reminder for everyone to preset your ovens for your character creations.
Yes, that's right. Follow along at home.
Yes.
Make your own witches.
What a harrowing experience that would be.
And at the end, we'll give you a little bit of a sneak peek of what's going to happen in the season, where it's set, what's going on. So, without further ado, we can talk about what it is we're actually playing this
season.
Oh,
my goodness.
We are playing The Witcher.
Oh, there it is.
So obligatory Witcher, I hardly know her.
Yes. Get them all out of the way right now, please. No more.
You already probably knew that, dear listener, because that's probably what we advertise this as.
But yeah, that's right. You probably read that before you prep play.
But for us, it's been this is the first time we've kind of said it out loud to an audience.
True,
so,
yeah. So The Witcher is the tabletop RPG by Pondsmith and Pondsmith, and published by friends of the show, R. Telsorian Games.
Oh,
yeah.
It's good eggs.
Three-time champions of this podcast
champions in the Baby Beard Media Gauntlet.
And I've been the one to run all three of their games. So that's Cyberpunk 2020, Cyberpunk Red, and now The Witcher, which is obviously based on...
Oh, the books.
Bye.
Andrew I hate you, Phil.
Sapkowski.
No, it's P, isn't it?
Yeah, Sapkowski.
Sapkowski.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't hear the K.
Nah.
Yay, well done, Sean.
Very well done, Sean.
As the German that I am, I'm adjacent.
Yeah, you got some, you're closest from the rest of us Australians.
Am I closer than Phil?
Yeah. To what?
As a German Poland? Heritage, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, sorry, true, I'm talking about geographically.
Oh, yeah, I was like,
well,
how
we're
far?
We're about a foot away. So
how far is Italy? Too far. It's in tomato Europe.
And you may have heard of a certain Witcher, a little Geraldo de Riviera, perhaps.
Oh, yes.
I get his name constantly wrong, I've realized. As the person who is the least kind of knowledgeable about the world, I've called him Geralt, 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 and Gerald.
Gerard Way.
It's Geralt.
Geralt.
Geralt of Rivia.
Geralt is, I think, in the video games. So someone does mispronounce his name.
Yeah, but also they gave, for the first one, they gave the voice actors probably about a buck and a ham sandwich. So I wouldn't put too much stock in that.
Oh, in the video games?
Yeah. Certainly not the first one for the voice acting.
I reckon
acting.
That's where people are probably, would that be fair to say people are most, at least audiences today would be most familiar with the video games?
If you're listening right now, you might be more familiar with the Netflix series, which
starring,
is season two, which has just come out. And so we will not be diving, and Phil can talk more to this, but this is absolutely the sort of game that you don't need to know much about the series to enjoy and listen along to. You don't need to be a Witcher aficionado.
No.
You don't need to know super stacks about the lore. We certainly, not all of us do. Some of us have a lot more than others.
I certainly don't.
But this is super accessible. So if you're new to TTRPGs or you're new to The Witcher, this is absolutely the podcast for you. But also, if you're a big fan of the show, there's going to be lots of nods. It will be totally in keeping with the lore.
Fits into the continuity.
We're not gonna be super unreliable in terms of keeping it authentic. But it's also very accessible.
I don't know about you guys, but I've been definitely drawing my research from all three. So from the book, from the games, and from the Netflix series. That's why I'm so jacked right now.
Yeah, the book kind of talks about the same thing. They took inspirations from the books, the video games, every form of media they could, because it's just so much to take from.
And together, we probably all weigh as much as Henry Cavill in the series.
Maybe.
Pure muscle, baby.
If you are unfamiliar, we'll be sort of covering a bit about the world and the lore here. Not extensively, obviously. There's lots of resources for you to kind of dive a bit deeper, but we'll give you a kind of primer about what witches are, what the world is, and how it all fits together. As a little Henry Cavill side note, I did notice recently someone had proposed an opposite of cleans up well to be grimes up good.
Yes. Grimes up good. Yeah. He does indeed.
So when Henry Cavill is on the red carpet in a suit, he looks like a wet biscuit, a handsome wet biscuit, but... grease him up a little bit and
He's like a shredded wheat, but then it turns into a frosted flake.
He certainly does.
Oh, he does.
And if you want to see us dressed as frosted flakes, as a grimy, sexy people, you can go on our Instagram. We do have lots of fan photos and stuff like that where we cosplay as characters from our series.
That's true.
Yeah, and we look pretty, I gotta say.
Grimy.
Grimy.
I was gonna say good.
Oh. Yeah, grimy good.
Yeah, we grime up good.
Grime is good.
Yeah.
So this, we'll talk about the setting before we talk about the system, because I think that's more interesting, more accessible place to attack it from. So who wants to tell me a little about the setting of The Witcher, what kind of genre and where it kind of sits?
I'll tell you about the genre.
Yeah, yeah.
So The Witcher sits pretty firmly in low fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
It is a grimy, gritty, fairly dark place where revelry is had and it's sought after, but it comes at a cost. People's experiences are pretty ignorant. It's often a fairly nasty place where prejudice runs wild.
Lots of bigotry.
Lots of poverty, lots of class differentiation, and very little optimism. And it's a place where the calling card of the series is negotiating the lesser of two evils.
Yes.
It's
a morally gray place.
A morally gray place where surviving is sometimes the only option.
Also full of superstition, it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And not only that, also full of real monsters. Yeah. So you've got a nice balance between the two.
I was going to say that real that's, like, that, that's like a theme, Nickelodeon nod.
Thank you,
that's
Sean. Like,
that's a theme that's so prevalent for those that have watched the series. They literally say it about 10 times. The lesser evil. The lesser evil. Like, they hammer home, like,
the greater
such a,
good.
The greater good. Such a prevalent theme in The Witcher.
Well, you know, Geralt addresses that very specifically in one of the games where he says, you know, there are no degrees of evil. Evil's evil. And he sort
good,
of, he yeah. and the Witchers are sort of cut through some of that idea with their singular purpose. So you can tell us a little bit about what a Witcher is, why it's the title of the game and the series.
This is a magic filled world where
it is, yeah.
there are the idea is that this is a kind of born from a conjoining of many worlds, and as a result all different things have kind of spilled through. Some things that we are familiar with, like humans, were brought to the world that was full of elves and dwarves and all sorts of different races, but so did a whole bunch of monsters. And witchers are called that because they are different from witches, which are bad. People don't like witches because they are sought to do magic. But it is the idea of you need magic to fight magic sometimes. So witches are an engineered race of monster hunters by using monster blood and other kind of chemicals in order to make them supernaturally strong, agile, fast, and they are quite long-lived. But they also are not, that might sound pretty cool, but however, witches are also feared a lot and despised by society, even though they are a product of that society. So yeah. It's a bit of a time, and the Witcher books do, the main character is a Witcher, Geralt of Rivia, a wolf Witcher, who is, he's got a very interesting life and trying to...
And love life.
He does have a very interesting love life. Ooh,
he's
boy.
A ladies' witcher.
So yeah, they're this dedicated order of monster hunters who are both highly kind of adapted with their mutations, but also very dedicated in their training as well.
Yes.
Both in terms of knowledge of monsters and in the techniques that they train in to fight them.
Mm.
And they're very necessary, but they're dying out. They did their job too well.
They ran themselves out of business.
They killed too many monsters, and so the witches have sort of fallen out of favor, and they're few and far between. But now the monsters are coming back.
A slack witcher would be an amazing story that deliberately tries to not be good at their job as so to maintain their job.
Yeah, I don't want to kill too many of the monsters. Yeah,
yeah. It's like fishing. You know, you gotta. Oh, this griffin is pregnant. We'll release her back into the wild.
As the prevalent fisher that I am.
Yeah.
You know, I understand Sean. That.
So they're like a highly prized, highly feared
yes.
Response to a problem.
Yes.
And that problem
yes.
is slowly disappearing.
Yeah.
Or slowly returning.
Returning,
yeah.
yes.
Yeah. Did disappear and is now on the now back on the rise, because the less they went after witches as well.
Yes.
And then when the witches went away, the monsters came back and they're like, well, shit, I guess we need the witches again
it's
now.
There's also a big plot point in the books, in the first game, where Kaer Morhen, which is one of the main fortresses of one of the Witcher schools, is sacked, and as such they have lost a lot of the ways to make witches. It's a very specific alchemical kind of process that, you know, is very prized, and it's very secretive amongst the mages and the witches, and without that resource it's obviously very hard to then
make more
engineer more yeah. witches.
And
yeah.
making witches is quite a traumatic experience.
Yes, a lot of witches, obviously they didn't make it to become witches, but a lot of children die in the
Straight
process.
Up, yeah.
So they're children who die.
Witches are kind of trained from birth.
Yeah,
it's almost like a ninja, you know, trained from birth.
Yeah, they either get
to be the ultimate.
Bought or sold by their parents, or, you know.
Law of surprise sometimes.
Yep. Yeah. Sometimes witches use a way of, it's a bargaining chip of, if you can't pay me, give me the first thing that kind of you see when you get home. And sometimes that can be an unexpected pregnancy.
Yeah.
So, now I have a witcher for the school. So they have ways of kind of bolster their ranks, but it's generally taking children, and it's a very grueling process of not just the mutations, which comes much later on in the process. But the first part is just the training alone. They have to be good with swords. They have to be able to survive in the elements. There's a lot of very brutal, rigorous trainings that wipes out a lot of the trainees before they even get to the process by altering their body with mutagens, which then wipes out even more. So of the witches that we know in the world, there are a lot of ones that didn't even make it that far. Hmm.
So the ones that we have are elite. They're the best of the best.
Best of the best of the best.
Yeah. Or just lucky that they survived that the whole process.
But as you mentioned, you know, it's the mages and through a magic and alchemical process that make them, because this is a world of magic as well, and has a very unique take on magic, which is really interesting. Sean, you've had to study a little bit of magic to make your character.
Just a touch.
Talk to us a little bit about how magic works in this world.
Yeah, I mean, like, following the lore of The Witcher, as Ellen kind of alluded to earlier, there's a thing called the conjunction of the spheres, which is basically the goddamn slamming of dimensions into one another. The continent, which is a slice of this world that we kind of set The Witcher in, had a lot of their elder races. They had gnomes, they had dwarves, and they eventually had elves. And then through the conjunction, humans came on board. And kind of with the conjunction as well, not only do you have humans, not only do you have monsters, you have chaos or magic that was bred through there. And through that, they found that even though only specific people find themselves adept at being able to use magic, people that found themselves more kind of able and successful at utilizing it was human beings.
Yes.
And humans just found that they were more readily able to access it and also readily able to abuse it.
Yes.
So it was in that sense that they, first of all, they drove the elves away from the continent, basically pushed them off to the east. That's where we talk about the whole racist angle that does come into The Witcher a lot. But when humans started setting up their kingdoms, they start setting up mages, they start setting up a society wherein they can protect themselves and their own. And also, in coming to do that, they needed a way to drive away the monsters. And so the initial idea with them was, okay, literally, hey, mages, go create things that can just sling magic. Do your best. And it failed mostly miserably to begin with. It ended up being like, because witches, which you'll find, they can use magic, but not very well. Yeah, or to an extremely limited
point. They have very basic magic, which is kind of through the use of signs. Whereas, you know, they have like a kind of stunning, they have a kind of, not coercion, but can be used to calm things. They've got very, basic elemental kind of magic that a mage would scoff at.
And whether you are a witch using signs or a mage utilizing the elemental forces, it's a very dangerous thing to utilize as a point. It's not only is there a give and take to magic, but you are harming yourself to use magic. It's still not a natural thing to do. So there is a cost to it, which you won't necessarily find in, say, something like D&D to an extent. Like, this is a world where, sure, these people can use magic and they're very dangerous and they're very powerful, but to an extent. And the book reflects it in a sense of you can only use it so much before it starts coming at a really dire cost to yourself.
Yeah. When you mean the book, you mean the TTRPG?
The TTRPG book, yeah.
So you mages literally use their bodies as a conduit for the chaos, as you mentioned, the elemental chaos. And so if they overdo it, it literally burns them from the inside out. It's highly dangerous. And then the elemental forces can also slip out of their control and create all these extra effects that they didn't intend.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a reason, similarly to the witches, we have these mage schools, because an untrained mage is a highly dangerous thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Both to themselves and to other people.
And to people around them.
And there are so many people within the continent as well who simply don't trust magic, or mages in general. Mages can also be kind of persecuted and run out. That's why we have something like the Mage Hunters, for example, which it's a collective of people through Nilfgaard, which we'll talk about probably at some point in this episode, where it's if you do not register yourself as a mage, this group, who's generally made up of mercenaries and assassins and people who just have a less than favorable viewpoint on mages, will basically come and collect you first.
Yes. Some of that negativity is due to mages have been doing a lot of wheeling and dealing in the world of The Witcher, in that they are very high political players and very, very important in the chessboard of kind of, you said that they protect their own, but in doing that, they have kind of enmeshed themselves in society as very, very powerful political tools.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, because I think the last kind of element to cover in the world of The Witcher is the grand political game of The Witcher, the kind of the backdrop to the struggles of the individuals that we might follow in any given story, because we have... There's endless war, almost. Several wars between the Northern Kingdoms and, as you said, Nilfgaard in the south. So while, you know, the witches that we follow are having their own personal battles against the monsters that threaten people, there are grand games and huge wars at play as well. And these generally take place between the disparate kingdoms of the north and the great homogenous empire of Nilfgaard in the south. And this isn't a case of good guys and bad guys. The Nilfgaard in the south, they may be more tolerant or even inclusive of the elves and dwarves, but they also keep slaves, and they have a history of kind of brutal conquest over the lands that they've consolidated. Chris, you've described them as kind of a medieval Rome.
Yeah, they're a Roman-esque example of a kingdom, whereas the north is very similar to, I guess, what you would call post Rome's Holy Roman Empire.
Or medieval Europe,
a disparate group of kingdoms and counties with local powerhouses looking after their own and having a kind of a feudalistic system.
Yeah, you have like all these kind of, in the north, small wars over land, quite often contested titles. Yeah. But then that versus the war against the north versus Nilfgaard is just like a whole different kettle of fish, where it's, you know, a whole empire is now coming to get that whole swath of land of like all the northern kingdoms.
It's also probably my favorite aspect of the Witcher lore and the Witcher story, which is basically, I remember when my first foray into the Witcher was the TV series.
Yeah.
And it at the very beginning, I go, okay, cool. Nilfgaard bad, North good. And that was like the initial impression that I got. Yeah. And the more you go into it, the more I started diving into the books. I love this idea of no, everyone's pretty shit.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the point. Like, you can look at the north and they give off this thing of, well, we're not Nilfgaard, but also we kicked out an entire bunch of races. So it's kind of what we did is now happening to us. So there's no one kind of comes out clean, which I love.
That's the thing I like most about The Witcher, is that it is very, you know, yeah, it's grim dark, but it is in the way that life is so often, where no one really comes out clean in the wash, and empires do not run on niceties. You know, no one's ever like gained land by doing good things. And this idea of this world where it's full of bad people doing bad things, good people doing bad things, you know, it's very complex and delicious to kind of just delve into.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to sort of bring it back down to the game and the individual stories. And the stories you want to tell in this game are just like the grander scheme of things. They're stories where things are not as they seem, things are hidden, the decisions the characters have to make are morally grey and difficult, and you have to kind of challenge their principles and their morals as they go through the game, which I think is just a really lovely, juicy thing for a storyteller. So I'm really excited by the opportunity to do that and place you guys in this world after having done Kids on Bikes, which is a little bit lighter, it's a little bit bouncier, it's a bit more cinematic. This is got a real grit to it, and I'm really, really looking forward to doing that.
We'll make choices and we won't know if they're the right ones.
Yes. Yeah. Now, the game itself works on a very similar system to Cyberpunk 2020 and Cyberpunk Red, which is a D10 system called the Interlock system. And we're not going to kind of pull it apart for you right now, but I think it's worth mentioning that this shares a lot of DNA with Cyberpunk 2020, in that it's a very lethal system that emphasizes a lot kind of bodily damage and moments of kind of terrible carnage that can happen.
I feel like fans of going mainstream are like Ralph sitting on the bus right now of like, I'm in danger.
We found that out very quickly when we tested out this system. system. Oh, we tested out some combat, and it got very dicey very quick.
In one round, it can go from pretty okay to, oh my God.
And yeah. I think what highlights that in this system is that the attacker and the defender roll to attack and defend, which means that when you're a defending character, there is a chance that if you fail to do it well, things might go really, really bad for you. Really striking the heart that if you're not prepared, if you're not ready, if you're not able to defend yourself, you'll quickly become a victim of brutality and violence inflicted on you. It isn't just about heroes succeeding. It's also about people failing to defend themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing you said about Witcher, right, Chris? It's like you got to put in the work. There's reasons that a lot of the witches in specific, like, but also mages and anyone in this world, you need to prepare yourself, you need to have the right things. And if not, well, then you're just a roll of the dice away from getting your ass handed to you. Sorry.
The Witcher world is not an easy life for pretty much anyone.
No.
You struggle, and if you have to backstab, if you have to, like, you do what you have to do to literally survive.
Yeah. Famously in the books, Geralt of Rivia, the hero of the series, falls wayward towards a farmer with a
pogrom, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. A pitchfork.
Yeah.
He's put out by it.
Yeah.
Showing that even the most highly trained from birth characters, if they're not prepared, if they are ill-prepared or they get unlucky, they can be at the pointy end of some trouble.
Of a pitchfork. Yeah,
yeah. Of a pitchfork,
exactly. It only needs to happen once.
Yeah. And that really drives home this idea that not everyone will maybe make it out alive.
Life in The Witcher is short, brutal, and cheap.
Yeah. But, you know, don't stop yourself from having a fan favourite, everybody. Yeah. I'm sure it's going to be A-okay for all of our characters.
And it really is the moments of revelry are sought out. It's not a miserable world where people are sad. They hold their bigoted opinions because that's the safest thing to do. Mm. And they celebrate with alcohol, with fun, with sex, with others. Exactly.
With music. With art.
They celebrate a lot, and they, because they are aware that the wrong step could be the last.
Okay, well, let's talk about the people we're going to be bringing into this world and this story. Let's start with...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Our Witcher.
Hello.
Let's talk to Ellen.
I'm a Witcher. Let me put you in the picture. So, anyone?
You've made a Witcher rap. That's going to be the intro.
No, it's from the Mighty
Boosh.
I know it is.
I stole a Witcher rap.
Yeah.
And it is mine now. Yes, I am playing a Witcher. Someone had to do it. And I've made a very interesting character. Her name is Eve, which I will tell you, audience.
Oh.
Well, because in the universe of The Witcher, most, if not all, witches are male. Now, people have read on, and I'm sure it's not spoilers for anything, but we know that there are some female witches, and even not pure blood human witches. There are a few different witcher schools that train in different ways, that have different values. And so while most of us know Geralt of Rivia, who is a wolf witcher, they hold the principality of neutrality very seriously. That's why Geralt's his whole thing is trying not to get into any trouble, and which always does get him
falling
into trouble.
Face first
it's
into
very
it.
Funny. But there is a school of Witcher called the Cat School, which is not really picky about who they train. So they have been known to train female witches or witches that are not of pure human stock. So Eve of Hirch is around 70 years old. She was taken from a very small village called Lawmark, which is kind of Kedwin or Aedirn, depending on who's winning the war at any given time.
It's always who claims it at the time.
Yeah. It's always been contested land. And so in comes the Din Marv caravan, which is the school of the cat. Eve gets taken away and trained as a witcher. And despite her gender, training works just the same. If you don't fall off a very big beam and fall to your death, then congrats, you're on your way to becoming a cat. wow. And she survived her mutagens, although it was a bit tough. The thing about cat witches as well is they were never picky, so they started experimenting with, you know, not just male boys, then girls, or, you know, they weren't picky about gender or race, but they also kind of rejected the idea of neutrality. So their thing was more about training witches, mainly using them for assassins, hired hitmen, that kind of stock. And they got more and more excited about experimenting with the mutagens that created witches. As a result, the first stock of cat witches had almost no empathy and were kind of a bit...
sociopath?
Yeah. Especially when you've just come from all this horrific training that is very violent and brutal. Mm-hmm. Who could blame them? There's a whole big revolt with the Din Marv caravan. It's very interesting. I won't get into it. But there is a tendency with the cat witches, because of their excessive mutagens, to struggle with violence. And certainly Eve does. Violent thoughts, violent impulses. And she's had to try and kind of keep that in check. She has a very low level of empathy and constantly struggles to fit in the world. As a result, you know, she's not young anymore. She's young for a witcher, more in her 30s, I guess, since she's 70 years old. But as a result, she's kind of worked a bit, met some different allies and mentors, and is trying to kind of be a bit more contemplative. And as a result, she's kind of become very stubborn in her morals and values. And the one kind of guiding principle in her life is, if she makes a promise, she will keep it.
That's a very good summary.
That might lend very well to then going on to Sean's.
Yes. Yes, nice throw there.
Yeah, that was a lot of information to convey.
Yeah, mine will be a lot less than that. So my character, I play a mage, a human mage by the name of Aurelius Tarnair. What it offers you to do when you're doing character creation is to roll for everything. Obviously, you don't have to. You can choose where you want. But I thought I would create my character as to where the dice lay. And similar to seasons past, I will always take my character. I will create the voice first. It's just happened every single time without fail. And so I did so accordingly. And the character just wrapped itself around that. So most interestingly so for myself is I am from Nilfgaard, Aurelius is. So Aurelius actually was born in a place called Gamera. And Gamera sits very much in the south in Nilfgaard. It is a very hardy town. It's very, very rocky, very mountainous. And it breeds a certain warrior type of people. People who have had a hard life, revel in fighting, can look after themselves. So, and that's a reputation that they hold. That and making good potatoes, I found out.
Oh.
Gamera's known for. Both are potatoes are warriors.
Growing potatoes or making them?
Growing them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a good place to find potatoes.
Mm. Yeah, lovely.
Good just, to know.
It was great for me to know.
Yeah, no, I love that kind of stuff.
And the way that Aurelius is his age, so he's in his late 40s. And so when he was a very young boy is when Nilfgaard was actually extending their empire, and they made their way through Gamera. They took a lot of outside places before because they recognized that Gamera is a tough place to overthrow. Mm. So they kind of bolstered their forces before making the move on Gamera. It was at this time that Aurelius, his parents, Myron and Chesna, though they understand that fighting is something that they are good at and that they relish, they don't believe in fighting without a reason, without a cause, and they don't believe that Nilfgaard fits that criteria. So their idea was to run. And Aurelius himself, he found his parents, they had run away without him, presumably, and they had, he found them died. He found them died.
Find
he
them found died. Them died. Red or purple or blue. Or
a lot of red, as it turns out, because he found them for some way, shape or form, murdered.
Murdered.
He was by some sort of beast.
Yes.
At some way. So he was taken pity on by a Nilfgaardian soldier. And as he grew older, he found that while it may have been a beast that murdered his people, his parents, there was an unregistered mage that was seen up there at the time.
On the route that they fled, yes.
Yeah, so he found, he decided that was where he was going to dedicate his life. He studied in Nilfgaard to become a mage.
Well, he discovered he has magical aptitude, right? So he has to go to the academy.
In line with... He now has a reason to go there as well. Not only does he have an aptitude for it, he realizes that if he studies, he has like both the knowledge and the skills
the
to be
power.
Able to pursue this person.
And this person is
Razine.
Thank you. I named her
Razine the Red.
Yeah, Razine the Red. And so this is a unregistered mage which Nilfgaard wants to bring back into the fold, that for a reason that he is unaware of, at least had a part to play in the murder of his parents. So basically, he has spent the better part of three decades with a single track focus to find this mage. It really doesn't matter to what end anymore. Like over the years, it's kind of been muddled up. It's just this person who's obsessed with the idea of he will say what he needs to say, do what he has to do, all in the service of finding Razine.
Yeah, and he has done some unspeakable things. We won't get into the details here because it might be a nice reveal during the narrative.
Yeah, he's done some morally grey things.
He's done some pretty extreme things in his pursuit. A couple of other things I will chuck in is 40 years old is pretty young for mage. Like witches, using magic extends your lifetime. So 40, he's still pretty babyish compared to a lot of other mages out there.
Yeah.
So in ways, he's immature. And the other thing was you mentioned a promise as a link to your characters. What was that you were talking about?
Do you wanna feel this one, Ellen?
Eve feels somehow that she was responsible for the deaths of Aurelius's parents, but whether she has not let him in on that knowledge.
Sean knows this, Aurelius doesn't.
Yes.
So she has a private promise to herself.
Yes, believing that they were killed by a different force that she was responsible for slaying in that area. Mm-hmm. I think I would just tiptoe around that.
Aurelius himself is highly confident to a fault. He is manipulative. He is insanely confident in his own abilities.
So a mage.
Yeah. Yeah, basically a mage. And someone that is, he will, as I said, he will do, he will say, he will step on anyone if it's in service of his goal. And he can justify it as such. That's Aurelius Tarnow. That's, I think, what you need to know coming into this season.
And Chris, you're playing?
I'm playing Briok.
Briok,
who is a elf merchant.
Well, there's two interesting things already there. So let's start with the first one. Let's unpack that. Elf.
Elf, yeah. So elves are a displaced people in their own home. They have had their lands taken away from them. And certain kingdoms like Nilfgaard are relatively positive towards elves, but still don't really give domain to elves as their own kind of like home, depending on where in the timeline you sit in The Witcher. And then in the Northern Kingdoms, they're relatively despised. They're looked down upon. They're treated like second-class citizens. They're treated like dirt. They operate
in... ghettoized. There's been pogroms.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There are groups called... there's a group called the Squirtel.
The Squirrels.
And they're a sort of domestic terrorist group that looks to help
elves and other oppressed people and take a power away from the humans and give it back to the rightful owners of the land, some might say.
Certainly
the elves would.
It's not wrong.
So Briok's a merchant, a traveling merchant, someone who brings supplies from one place to another, sells, trades, wears, prepares, helps people on their way. A generally pretty positive person.
Must be risky traveling as an elf.
Absolutely.
Because the areas that will accept you versus the ones that will, you know, kind of shoot on sight oscillate wildly.
Mm-hmm. And Briok is a relatively affable person, generally pretty positive to get along with. That's how he makes his trade. That's how he lives. He manages to get on well enough with humans that he can trade with them. Generally.
It's almost like a response to their attitudes is to give them nothing to latch onto.
That's right. It's a way of adapting to circumstance is through this trade. Hey, I can speak to people really well. I can make my way through this society just. Let's steer into that and become a kind of material broker.
And having things that people need gives you
a bit of leverage.
Yeah, leverage, or just makes you good to have around.
That's right.
For the near future.
Yes. How do you fight oppression? You make yourself indispensable.
And you've sort of become a sort of quartermaster for the group. You've been traveling with them for a while, and so by attaching yourself to more powerful people and making sure they have what they need, you have some measure of protection yourself. That's pretty
accurate. And that's pretty much Briok. There's a lot in the history that we won't get into. Whether it comes up in game or not is entirely up to Phil. But there are little secrets and little notes that we can dive into. Needless to say, Briok's helped Sean's character, the mage, in the past.
Aurelius
has been aided by Briok, and
Briok has given him information in the past in service of finding out, for example, a location.
Yeah.
And so it's a mutually beneficial relationship, I think, where you have the ability to provide him with information of where this mage will be. And in turn, I'll ride along with you.
Yeah.
And it's good to have a mage, isn't it?
I get the company of a mage, which is pretty fucking great.
Yes. But you also can source, you know, things like reagents and artifacts and alchemical materials, all that sort of stuff that make the life of a witcher and a mage that much easier.
I make it comfy.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Well.
I think it's very interesting, right? We're all strange bedfellows. It almost feels like one of those relationships where, like, you know, maybe years have gone by and you're like, huh, we're still traveling together. I guess that's just how it is now.
Yeah. I guess we're companions now.
It's convenient, but it's also a measure of risk because here are three very hated people in different areas of the world, very feared. And, you know, like we said, with a lot of Witcher things, it swings both ways. You get unmeasurable power, but it can also be used against you.
These are three odd fellows who have been thrown together. Not necessarily because they want to, but because circumstance demands it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A witcher, a mage, and an elf.
And it just seems that they've just like kind of found a routine that works. So why mess with it?
To give you a little bit of a look at the campaign coming up, you know, just a tiny little soupçon of what might be going down. I'll give you the setting. We'll be playing in a quite famous location in the Witcher universe. It's the capital of Temeria. That is a city called Vizima. We'll be playing in Vizima in a slotting ourselves into the timeline just after the timeline of the second game, just before the third game, so that people in the know will know what that means, and it doesn't give anything too much away for those who are new to the world.
That's the year of 1272.
Yes.
If that helps anyone.
The beginning of the Third Nilfgaard War
is
where we're playing. And what brings our little merry band to Vizima, or grim band, depending on the day, I guess, is that we have picked up word of Razine the Red arriving at Vizima ahead of the Nilfgaardian army. And if the party can get there before the city is fully encircled by Nilfgaard, then perhaps at long last they may have her cornered. And that is where we begin the game. A backdrop of war and strife, but a personal mission of vengeance in the heart of our characters. So it's the big and the small all together. And I can tell you the name of the campaign, our little story.
I don't even know this yet.
No, so no one does. I haven't told anyone. The name is The Blood-Soaked Rose.
Oh! Oh, I love it.
Blood-Soaked Rose.
You should be very pleased with yourself.
Thank you. I am. And for those with a little bit of lore, that might give you some clues about some of the things I'm playing on as well. And if you don't, all will be revealed in time. So, once again, a big thank you to Artelsaurian Games for making this wonderful, wonderful game for us to play and supporting the podcast in the past. Very much hope that they'll come back at the end of the season to chat to us about this amazing game that they've made. Boy. And reflect on the season. I'm sure they will. Fingers crossed. We'll have to erase this if they don't.
We can get Turf and Turf. Pondsmith and Pondsmith.
We've gone to a war with Artelsaurian.
Yes, we will have to go and capture one of them and drag them onto the show.
As Australians, we are the Southern Kingdom.
We are the Southern Kingdom.
We are Nilfgaard. And our empire will stretch across the world.
Does anyone have anything to add? Anything they want to sign off with?
Well, it is nothing. It's not a sign off, but just to add one of the Nilfgaardians in the show in the first season is a bloke from Adelaide. He's an Adelaidean actor.
Oh.
Yeah. So technically, we are invading.
Well, I'm glad that he got work.
That's not all of us do.
It's a great little bit of trivia. Thank you. That's wonderful. So come back next week or immediately after this if you're binging it all, as I know you probably are, for episode one of The Witcher tabletop role-playing game, The Blood-Soaked Rose. I've been Phil.
I've been Ellen.
I have been Sean.
I've been Chris.
Bye.
Beautiful. Bye. Bye.
You have been listening to The Blood-Soaked Rose, which is a Roll to Cast production. The best way to find us is on Twitter, Discord, and our Patreon. All our podcasts are on Acast, Spotify, YouTube, and all good podcatchers. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rolltocast. The Witcher tabletop role-playing game is property of Artelsaurian Games. Used with permission.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.